Group is Thievery Corporation with one of their hit tunes, The Richest Man in Babylon. It is the title of, it's not the title of the album. It is from the album, the 2002 album, It Takes a Thief. Well, I'd say there's enough... There are enough hints here to tell you where we're going today. Where are we going today? We're talking about certain developments, and we should stop. We should pause for a minute and take note. Because a lot of things happened over the weekend. As I see, the pattern is to sneak the news past the people, see if they notice anything, and of course we do. One thing we noticed is that Barack Obama, who has maintained a low political profile since leaving office, is taking a lot of heat for what is fast becoming a political firestorm. In a speech he gave in Berlin, Germany, over the weekend, Obama cautioned progressives to guard against straying too close to the left or straying too far to the left, which he said is what most people would find reasonable to take such a position and would be inclined to support it. But he's worried that the Democratic Party, and of course the individuals within the party, are showing troubling signs of not being measured in their political activism and basically staying away from taking extreme or extremist positions. So there you go. What is happening? What happened to good old Barack Obama? Is he taking a position that, despite the fact that people may have problems with it, there is some legitimacy to his argument? And it would not be a bad idea for many Democrats who are, they talk that talk, and they believe that that's what's going to fire up support for them. But actually, to many people who are participating in a vote, that kind of talk is kind of scary. And they just want, they don't want the Democrats to become the Republicans. But then again, you have to say that the Democratic Party had spent so many years being careful, being moderate, avoiding the potholes, the political potholes. And so they spent many years watching their language and being dead center of the political spectrum. And lo and behold, in some cases it worked. In some cases it didn't work. So I'm going to ask you today, how do you decipher Obama's statement? What do you think would cause him to say that Democrats need to watch the tendency to become extremist in their views and forget some of the basic rules of politics? You don't want to scare people. You don't want to frighten the horses. You want to win. And is it on Obama's part a kind of indication that that's how he played the cards, by not going to the extreme left, not going to the extreme right, but navigating the middle. And therefore, it was a much safer bet that would have landed him the presidency, as inevitably it did. And so he is troubled by what he's seeing, what he's hearing. What do you say about that? I have a lot to say, but this is your program. I always have to remember, you got to leave room for the peeps. 888-874-4888. This is a very significant sense of direction that Obama has taken. And especially at this time, he did not, prior to the weekend, I don't recall, and I searched and I don't see any reporting of that, I don't recall him taking a similar situation, taking a similar position. But something compels him to take that position now. Now that he's out of office, now that he is a bit freer to express himself, or is something else happening here? 888-874-4888. What have you to say about that? Is he on the right track? Is he trying to help the Democrats avoid disaster? Because many of them have, you know, they're as close as they're going to get before they literally even jump over the fence with some of their statements. And if the idea is that politics in the end is a tactical game, and you have to understand how to play the game so that you win. I know people are reviled by that kind of talk, but it is true. You can't pretend that politics is not about winning. It is about winning. But what is the mood of the voter at this time, or by the time the next election rolls around next year? What would be the mood of voters? What would they listen to and what would they reject? What do they think will make sense to them, and what don't they want to hear anything about? Does the Democratic Party itself have a concern about the conduct of elections and how people behave, what they say, what they do during election season, and mindful of the impact statements and these kinds of behaviors might have on people's decisions, whether to vote for Democrats or whether to vote for Republicans or progressives or independents or whomever. The attitude of the voter is of great interest to everybody. You don't want to turn people off. You don't want to give them a reason to hate you. But at the same time, you want to welcome people, especially if they're new, into the party. You want the support that they tentatively could bring with them to put you over the hump. You want a party that communicates specific things, values, people call them. What does a party stand for? What is the backbone, the philosophical backbone of the party? Are they reading it right among the voters? Are the voters fed up with this kind of namby-pamby talk and they want a bit more stridency? John from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Good. It's not morning anymore, is it? I was going to say good morning, but good afternoon.
You slept too long this weekend, John.
Listen, I haven't slept nearly enough to catch up. I got to say, when Barack Obama came on the scene, I jumped on his bandwagon with everything I had. I was actually driving old people to the polls. I was stuffing mailboxes. And never have I been so disappointed. I remember them saying that, referring to him as a centrist, and I kept saying to myself, the last thing we need is a centrist. We need a tough person to fight for us. We need somebody to, lay their life on the line so that the rest of us can advance a little bit. When I say the rest of us, I mean the people who have to work for a living. I ended up calling him the origami president, having folded on just about everything. And I'm bitter about it, to tell you the truth. I thought there was a chance, but that was squelched. I honestly believe that within the first week or two of him winning the election, that he was invited by the top Republicans to a screening. And I believe this is all hypothetical, of course. They do call me a conspiracy theorist, people I know. They screened the Zagruder film for him. And if you remember, the Zagruder film was that 8 seconds of JFK's head being splattered all over that convertible and Jackie trying to climb in the back to grab parts of his brain to put back into his head, hopefully that he could survive such a horrible attack. And, I mean, I could come to tears right now thinking of that. And where would we have been if JFK was allowed to have lived? I don't know. But I think we would have been a heck of a lot better off than we are now. And that's all I have to say about Mr. Obama.
Is what Obama is saying, does it have any amount of relevance to you in today's politics?
Not at all. Not at all. He had his chance, and he let it go. Not at all.
Well, I'm not talking so much about his chance. Yes, I agree. He already has had a chance twice, actually. But what I'm talking about is his commentary, nonetheless, was trying to draw attention to a palpable deterioration in where politics has brought us.
Well, politics has always been a dirty game. And, you know, cheating and lying is part of the course. I also, when I get into conversations with people, I ask them the question, when was the last time a Democrat assassinated the president? And the answer to that is, of course, never. So, you know, we're fighting pure evil. That's what we're up against. The evil of greed, of having everything go their way and be damned with the rest of us.
Well, then comes the issue that he raised, and he raised it very clearly. And I think it's a legitimate point about, as he sees it, he sees it as people going to the extreme. Now, I don't happen to think that it's extreme, but I could understand how Obama, who was dedicated to being a moderate, these are examples of extreme politics that we are seeing today, extreme lying, extreme thievery, extreme efforts to undermine a political system, winning by every means necessary. Do you see any legitimacy in his point?
Do I see any legitimacy in his point? I think that the only way you can deal with extreme circumstances is to be extreme yourself, i.e. fight fire with fire. That's the only way I see us fixing the situation that we're in right now.
Are any of the candidates doing that, Republican or Democrat or independent or progressive? Is anybody fighting fire with fire, to your estimation?
No, because it's like I often hear people, and yourself included, about how what we have to do is organize ourselves. And if we organize ourselves to go up against the status quo will crush us. They will crush us. We won't have a prayer to succeed. But first of all, they know everything about us. They know when we talk. They know when we have bowel movements. They know everything about us. And they want to know even more so that they can take us out before we even speak up against them, much less have some kind of revolution. You know, I mean, it's a joke. This is why they want to disarm everybody, the Second Amendment, because they want to be the only ones with guns.
Do you think your point of view is more so the point of view of masses of people, or do you think you're in the minority?
I think I'm still in the minority. I think masses of people don't really know what's going on. They've been fed the wrong information. They've been lied to. They've been gradually having that carpet slipped out from under them. And sooner or later, they're going to have absolutely nothing. You know, the jobs are all going away, which is kind of inevitable when you think about what we're up against. I mean, anybody who's in business to make a buck, if they realize that they can get a robot to do the job of 10 human beings that work 24 hours a day and they wouldn't have to pay them anything, that's what they're going to do. The problem with that is they don't realize in the end there'll be nobody out to buy the product that day, nobody alive to buy the product that they manufacture. So it's like, it's a sorry state of affairs. I really don't know what the answer is. That's why I don't run for politics.
But at least you gave us an insight as to how your brain is working on this central issue.
I question that often, too.
Obama posed, saying that what he was saying is that the secret to political success is to move away from the edges and come more to the middle, because the middle is where people don't mind gathering because they feel safer. There are more people gravitating toward the middle than toward the edges. And he is now saying to the Democrats, that's where you're heading. I see indications that you are accommodating the people who are on the edges, and you should be kind of shepherding most people. If you're going to succeed in this thing called politics, you should find the middle, which is where people feel safer, they feel more hopeful, and they feel that the values expressed in the middle are more reflective of their own, as opposed to the people on the edges. Thanks, John, for getting us started today. 888-874-4888. We're talking about President Obama's message, which basically tells, it's a message to Democrats. As you notice, he hasn't been talking directly to the Democrats. I guess he doesn't want to be seen as a person interfering in the leadership of the party. But he is concerned that the party, from his perspective, is veering too much to the edges and not staying with the middle, which is where he thinks most people are. And most people would likely support a party that stays close to the middle. Now, this is a theory. This is not new. It's a theory that has permeated politics for many decades, but especially in recent years, as people have become more vocal about politics, the idea is, shouldn't we just learn the lesson and try it for once to keep the pace with those who represent the bulk of the party in their way of thinking? Bruce from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
I'm hanging in.
Right, okay. Well, Utrecht, this statement by Obama, I mean, when I hear things like this, and I have to depend on you to hear stuff because I don't listen to this type of thing, media, right? But I mean, the other kind of media where I'll hear the stuff. You know, I am not surprised if Obama were operating in the period after 1619, when there was slavery in this country, he would find some type of middle of the road mantra, narrative to justify the establishment, right? Obama's big failure was, for the first year or two, he played this game with the Republicans, and the Republicans, you know, dismissed him, right? Did not give him Supreme Court appointments that he should have, did not help him with his legislative agenda. But still, I mean, he is like a slave who is, and I call him a slave, you know, I'm not saying that apologetically. This is like a slave who's been so beaten that he only knows how to worship one master. Right. You know, I am not surprised that Obama would talk like this. I mean, and even during his presidency, black people in this country made backward steps as far as ownership, net worth and stuff is concerned. And he had no response to any of these things. But still, he believes this Melody Road duopolistic nature should be the dominant thing. I mean, I don't understand how he could, in his own mind, justify this type of nonsense.
All right, so suppose you take on the response. You're writing, or I'm saying writing, I mean you're talking out loud the response to Obama's position. What would it sound like?
The response to Obama's position would be exactly this. That he has tried this Melody Road, and this Melody Road thing, this duopolistic norm, you know, cannot hold the center. The problem for Obama is that he cannot recognize that the center of that type of mainstream politics that he likes cannot hold forever. At some point in time, people are going to realize, look, something is we are not being served, right? At the same time, Obama has no retort when it comes to the radical right of Trump. He has no answer for that. All he can do is to tell us, the obedient Democrats, not me, right, but that body of people, that you should play this nice boy game and play this center the rule thing. So that would be my response to him.
Well, that's very interesting. I thought it was most interesting that not only would he make the statement, but he had to go outside of the country to make such a statement.
Yeah, but that's the same type of stupid game. You know, Trump has not obeyed any of those rules, you know? And to be honest with you, Utrecht, I am not a voting person, right? But I had to vote out before to vote for Trump, because at least he would tell you something that I disagree with him 99.9% of the time. But I'll prefer a Trump, right, than a sneaky, weasel type of character like an Obama. And I never trusted him from the beginning. I always thought he was a professional politician, right? And he will talk outside of the country because he believes that if he talks within the country, that he will engage a discourse in a way that may bias, you know, people like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or somebody else. So he's playing this Melody Road DLC type game, you know, this type wire type game. And, you know, obviously, and that is why, you know, he's talking about it outside of the country.
Okay. Well, if Obama is listening, so far I could see so many, the remnants of so many lashes across his back he's gotten already. Thanks so much, Bruce, for calling in today and contributing always meaningfully. Thank you. Bill from New Jersey, what say
you? Good afternoon, Utrecht.
Hello. Good afternoon to you.
A couple things on this. I heard some of what Obama said in Germany, which is ironic that he goes out of the country, goes to Germany to say these things. And one of the other things he said was, my policies were so mainstream that if I was back in the 80s, I would have been considered a centrist Republican. That is pretty serious stuff. Is he right about winning, that centrism is the way to win? In general, I'd have to say yes, he is right about that. However, in this particular election, when you're going up against an extreme Donald Trump, an extreme to the right, you're going to have to go, you know, like a previous caller said, fight fire with fire. You're going to have to go the other way. And the current candidates really aren't really looking at winning. They're looking at getting the nomination. And if you don't go out Bernie, you don't get the nomination. Hillary Clinton tried to out Bernie a little bit. You know, she's a centrist, as was Bill Clinton. And she tried to go a little left to out Bernie, but she also had the fix in. She also cheated. If she hadn't gone left and cheated, Bernie would have had the nomination. So the Elizabeth Warrens, et cetera, are trying to out Bernie Bernie to get the nomination. Then they'll worry about winning. And, you know, they can back, once they get the nomination, they can back down a bit. I mean, it's all lies anyway, in order to try to win.
Well, the thing is that they have to watch what they say, because I got from what Obama said that there might be some really serious concern about money. I don't know, who is going to give a candidate money if the candidate is seen as being too left of center or even too right of center? So I read a hint that Obama was dropping was that where it is now, people should expect, you know, a tampering down of the zeal of donors to give.
In the corporate money, for sure. If you want Wall Street money, for sure. But Bernie, in his first run, didn't have any problem with fundraising. I mean, he had a groundswell. He had, you know, people were fired up. People were sending money. So if you give the people what they want, they will fund you. But, you know, they have to believe. And everyone knows, or at least most people know, that Elizabeth Warren is not for real. She's not a real progressive. This is, you know, a new face she's put on. But they believe that Bernie was legitimate because Bernie has been saying the same thing for, you know, his entire career. For 30 years, he's been saying the same thing. So you have to believe that it, at least he believes it. If he's been at it for, you know, 3 decades, and they funded him. People funded him. He would be president right now if Hillary Clinton hadn't cheated him. He'd be president right now if he wasn't assassinated. He'd be president right now.
And now that we've heard this from outside of the United States about how to conduct a good election, tactically, in the United States, what does it say to you about where Obama is right now?
Well, Obama is concerned about legacy, of course. It doesn't make him look good that he has his 2 terms, and then Trump comes in right after him, undoes everything he did, and gets 2 terms, which he's going to get a second term. And so that makes him look bad. I'm sure he's concerned with, you know, with his legacy and how it makes him look. It already makes him look bad that he couldn't get Hillary Clinton elected, even though he said, "I'll be personally offended if black people don't go out and vote for her." And he campaigned for her as hard as a sitting president has ever campaigned for the next person. So he wants, for his own personal legacy, for a Democrat to get elected. He wants Trump out, and he wants a Democrat elected, and he feels that this is the way to do it. And I'm not saying that he's not right in some fashion. But if you take Bernie out of the equation, you know, they don't want Bernie. Bernie, you know, that's not happening. We don't want him. We want, you know, a Biden or Warren. That's what we want. Or even a recycled Hillary Clinton. That would be great, you know, for what Obama wants. But I don't think that you go up against Trump with centrism. That's not going to get the job done.
It's a losing proposition in your mind.
I do believe it is a losing proposition when you have a guy, you know, spitting out, heavy propaganda and fiery words and fiery rhetoric, and you're going to go up on the stage and be nice and centrist. I don't see it. I don't see that being successful.
Well, thank you. Always interesting to listen to what's going on in your head.
Thank you.
Thanks for allowing us to share what's going on in your head. Thanks, Bill, for calling in. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Nutrice. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good. You know, I don't understand why Obama has a say-so in anything. Anyway, it's not like he's picked the candidate that he's supporting. He's not out there campaigning. You know, based on what he's done as president, you know, his voice means absolutely nothing to me, to be honest. I think that his leadership of the Democratic Party has done nothing but cause a problem in regards to the party moving forward with a real agenda. What he did to Keith Ellison when he was running for the head of the DNC and manipulated so that Tom Perez could become the president of the DNC, which has absolutely led to nothing as far as I'm concerned. You know, I just don't understand the use for him. Why does he have such a big problem with the Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warrens trying to take the party in a different direction to help the people that he supposedly was the champion for, everyday people? I mean,
Can I ask you to answer your own question? It's a very, very important question. You want to tackle an answer?
No, you can do it.
No. I want to know what your version is. What are you seeing?
I'm basically seeing a manipulation of the direction of where the party should be going and the message that it should be putting forward. And to me, it's not a positive message for everyday people. It's not a message that's going to lead to anything, as far as I'm concerned, that will systematically change the situation that we as a country is in regards to income inequality and just total direction.
If you were sitting across the table from Obama right now, what would your advice be to him with regard to, since he's in a position to influence people's thinking and of course influence their actions, what would you say to him?
I would say to him, why do you have such a hard time trying to help everyday people have better lives? Why do you have such a hard time with challenging those who are destroying the structure of the country and making it so that people can live? Why are you so protective of their interests and not protective of everyday people's interests? You know, what are you getting for it in return? You know, why are you basically hurting upcoming minorities, white, poor white, and all others? You know, what are you doing? What are these people giving you for you to back individuals that really have no direction nor are going to do anything for everyday people? They're just going to make it a status quo to allow the rich to become richer and richer. If you have such a problem with what's going on, why don't you say something in regards to Donald Trump and what he's done to basically all of the legislation that you put forward and that you passed? Why don't you go on the attack against him and his policies? you know, that's what I would say to him. Why are you sitting back not saying anything or challenging, honestly, the direction that this clown is taking the country in? You know, if you want to make some sort of a argument, that's what you do. And once you make that argument, then, you know, the candidates would be able to piggyback off of your message, and then that will determine how this thing would probably move forward. You know, if you feel that you have that much influence, because if you had that much influence, those candidates would have to respond, and those candidates that responded, the people would then have to respond to what their response was to his message, since so many of them are his loyalists. You know what I mean? I mean, we just get played totally. The man is just playing us and manipulating the American public to the point to where they don't even have a direction or agenda. The Democratic Party has no direction or no agenda. You know what I mean? Like your previous caller was talking about Elizabeth Warren and Bernie, you know, and Bernie Sanders. And that, you know, he's made it seem to me that Elizabeth Warren is faking the funk, that she's really not about what she's trying to put out there. Do I know? I don't know. But all I do is hope is that whoever the Democratic nominee is going to stand up for everyday people and try to say that we need to make some sort of systematic changes so that our children can have a future in this country. Because believe me, if it continues to go the way that it is going now, your children will have no future. So I would say to all parents now, have your children learn as many different languages as they can and start to look outward bound. Start to look at other countries on where they can go and fit in and maybe have a life for themselves. Because believe me, I know a couple of children that learned different languages, and now they're in other countries doing pretty good for themselves. You know what I mean? And that's opportunities that's available that we don't even think about. I know three people, one in China, one in Japan, and one in Africa, that's doing quite well. Quite well. And matter of fact, the one in Japan don't even want to come back to America because he's set forward such a life for himself that is absolutely amazing. And you know what he did? All he did was go over there and teach English. For what reason? I didn't even know that the Japanese people were looking for those type of positions. And the other one went to China and teach English and have been able to set up beautiful lives for themselves, families and everything. And here in this country, the way that it's looking, and I mean, Bernie's talking about it, Elizabeth Warren talking about, but the others aren't talking about it, is that by the time these kids graduate from college and they assume the type of debt that they're assuming, they really don't even have no chance for life. The majority
probably will have to have a massive change. And you're pointing out to some of the ways in which we have to reorganize our thinking. Thanks so much for calling. And thanks so much for contributing to the discussion today. Well, as with all things Bloomberg, when you are in trouble, you go to Brooklyn and you find a black church. And there you make a heartfelt confession about a major wrong you have done. But still, you manage to cope with it, you know, just grappled onto your breast with hoops of steel. And suddenly you find yourself seeking God's forgiveness. Such was the case over the weekend when Michael Bloomberg, one-time mayor of the city of New York, went to the Christian Cultural Center. And this is another thing, and we just heard reference to that. Every time they do something stupid, every time there is a massive problem that they need to get out of, black folks are the answer. Get them in the church. And so he went. I just wanted to hint, just a hint is enough to get you really, really angry. When Michael Bloomberg became mayor in 2002, he initiated what was then called the stop and frisk method of crime prevention, which gave the police sweeping authority to target for questioning and searching and arresting anyone that looks to them as a possible criminal or suspect. In just the first year, there were 97,296 stops conducted. 84% were men of color. By 2013, there were 191,558 stops conducted. But hear this part. Between 2003 and 2013, over 100,000 stops per year were being made. Per year. And as if that is not enough, it went sky high, so that by the time the program hit its height in 2011, 685,724 people were unnecessarily and illegally stopped and questioned. And what else have you? That these numbers alone should stop us in our tracks. But let's talk about the consequences for those people, apart from the abuse of their constitutional rights and so forth. You think of the kind of pressure they were living under. Where were they going to get the money to bail out if they could be bailed out? What is happening to their families when these men were just snatched off the street? What is the agony of their families? I just read you they're just numbers, you would say. 685,724 people per year? Per year? And you give that authority to the police. They can do whatever they need to do to satisfy their curiosity about their how they're reading the people, you see, their body language or whatnot. There were no consequences. And now that he wants to run for president, he knows this is a problem. He can't ignore it. This is still a looming problem. Because what does it say about him and this fascist way of operating a government? What does it say that you had, I mean, unbelievable biases working, and you finding that well over 70 and 80% of the people being stopped for no reason at all are men of color. And he's so brazen. And that is because the communities that have been affected so dramatically, they did nothing. He should not have had second go-round, second chance at being a mayor. And now he wants to be president. Well, I am saying you missed out and you fell down on the job. Don't fall down again. And you see how readily there was a black minister and a black church waiting to accommodate Michael Bloomberg. The implicit meaning being, we forgive you and we're so glad that you apologized. Apologies mean nothing. These people are to be compensated. These people are to be forgiven. And the leader of the city at that time has to forfeit something. He must be compelled to forfeit something. And we have to have reparations here. You could always, when you're wealthy, and you can do these kinds of outrageous things to people, excuse me, people perceived as having no power or no courage to challenge you. But I am saying, please make it a point to challenge Michael Bloomberg now. That little ceremony yesterday in the black church in Brooklyn, by no means do we accept that as an apology, and on the part of the minister, as forgiveness. This man, I just read you the numbers, they're mind-boggling. And those are annual numbers. You can't even wrap your brain around these kinds of numbers. This represents the damage done and the racist intention to target blacks and Latinos and men. Look at the numbers again. You should go research them. And what you're looking at is absolute chaos. It's an apocalypse. A guy trying to just get to his little piece of a job, and next thing you know, he's behind bars, suspected of something, and this throws his whole game, his whole life off. And he has to struggle. He's got to find the money. He's got to find a way to deliver himself from this evil process. But only yesterday did Michael Bloomberg realize how wrong it was. Only yesterday. And he has come because all you have to do is go to one black church and you have expiated all your sins. You've purged yourself because, you know, you can always find a black preacher to further insult his own community by rendering the service of cleansing the mayor, the ex-mayor, of his sins. And then, of course, to set him up for the next leg of his personal adventure. We need to do something. This is not right. And we need to step up and make this city pay for what it did. That has had far-reaching effects. And we are the ones who should apologize. We are the ones who should step forward publicly and confess that we didn't have the courage to stand for truth, to stand for the right thing, to stand up for brothers and sisters out there, snatched off the street like in any fascist nation. And we also need to make it very clear, by no means is he to become a president, unfit for duty. This thing just really irked me so much yesterday with a report of coming to Brooklyn, you know, where the colored people are, and you have this minister basically forgiving Michael Bloomberg of his major sins for no reason other than he could do it, and therefore he could choose who to do it to. Remember this. You have a job to do. Thanks so much for joining me today. Great feedback from you. We'll come back to each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. The rich is mine.